Diodinena. Prevrida. Hopa. Spurita. Adharina. Asatkrita. Sat. Sprihaniya. Shila. Shata. Sa. Karna. Anuja. Sobalena. Iti uchivans tatra sudyodhanena. Pravrida kopa spurita dharena. Asatkritak sat sprihaniya shila. Shata sakarana nuja sobalena. Ityuchitams tatra suyodhanena. Pravrida kopa spurita dharena. Asatkritak sat sprihaniya shila. Shata sakarana nuja sobalena. Ladies. Iti, thus, uchivan, while speaking, tatra, there, suyodhanena, by Duryodhana, pravrida, swollen with, kopa, anger, spurita, flapping, Adharena, lips, Asatkrita, insulted, sat, respectable, Sprihaniya, Shila, desirable qualities, Shata Vidura. Sa with Karna Karna. Anuja younger brothers. Sobalena with Shakuni. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. While speaking thus, Vidura, whose personal character was esteemed by respectable persons, was insulted by Duryodhana, who was swollen with anger and whose lips were trembling. Duryodhana was in company with Karna, his younger brothers, and his maternal uncle, Shakuni. Please repeat,
while speaking thus,
Vidura,
whose personal character was esteemed by respectable persons,
was insulted by Duryodhana, who was swollen with anger, and whose lips were trembling. Duryodhana was in company with Karna, his younger brothers, and his maternal uncle, Shakuni. It is said that giving good counsel to a foolish person causes a fool to become angry, just as feeding milk to a snake only increases its venomous poison. Saint Vidura was so honorable that his character was looked up to by all respectable persons. But Duryodhana was so foolish that he dared to insult Vidura. This was due to his bad association with Shakuni, his maternal uncle, as well as with his friend Karna, who always encouraged Duryodhana in his nefarious acts. Idyuchivams tatra suyodhanena pravrida kopas purita dharena asatkritak sat sprihaniya shila Shata Sakarana Nuja Sobalena. While speaking thus, Vidura, whose personal character was esteemed by respectable persons, was insulted by Duryodhana, who was swollen with anger and whose lips were trembling. Duryodhana was in company with Karna, his younger brothers, and his maternal uncle, Shakuni. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutte Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatundeve Gauravani Pacharne Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskatya Desatarne. Vidura had just criticized Duryodhana, saying that he was offense personified, that he should be immediately removed. So naturally, Duryodhana, who was not a saintly person, was not exactly overwhelmed with joy to hear this advice coming from Vidura. And naturally, he reacted as a normal, everyday demon would react. And he wanted, instead, Vidura to be thrown out of the house. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna had said, that the austerity of speech, anuvega karam vakyam satyam priyahitam chayat swadhyaya vyasanam chaiva vangmayam tap uchite, that there's a certain austerity that goes along with speech. So the first thing it says, anuvega. Vega means pushing, and anu means continuous. Especially the tongue is continuously pushing us. Prabhupada gives the example of the frog. The frog, it likes to croak. Around here, I'm sure there's a few frogs once in a while. And I'm sure they like to croak. And, or the crickets around here, maybe they're talking about cricket or something, but they're always talking. And it is not that they just like to croak for a little while, they continuously croak.
They can hear themselves croaking the whole night, but their croaking doesn't serve any real purpose except to invite the snakes to come and eat them. Similarly, in the material world, the tendency to talk is always there. If only to hear ourselves talk, we talk. Everyone likes to hear the sound of their own voice. So especially, we have to learn how to chant japa because we may not listen to anyone else, just like during kirtan. If we're leading, then generally we listen to ourselves, but we don't listen to anyone else because everything about ourselves, or at least this body, somehow or another, we've fallen in love with, including the sound of our own voice. Although we're not the body, somehow or another, due to misidentification, we've become very attracted to it, so practically we become one with the body in terms of interest. And everyone else may not like the way our body, the aroma of our body, but we always like the aroma of our body in, under all circumstances. We like the way it smells, we like the way it talks, we like the way it, well, everything about it, we're enamored by it. And if someone else appreciates our body, then they're our friends. Then somehow or another they're enlightened, they have proper discrimination, and we can appreciate them. Because they've understood something about the Supreme. So similarly, anuvega means that we can say all kinds of nonsense, but to us it sounds just like nectar. Karam vakyam. So the karam means to do and vakyam means to speak. So there's a continuous pushing of the urge to speak. But satyam, our speech should be truthful. We're going to speak. Even people who are so-called taking a vow of mona. It is not that they're not speaking, but they're speaking in their minds to themselves, or maybe to other people in their minds. There are different types of sound vibrations. One sound vibration is expressed externally, another one is within the mind, another one is in the heart. And then there's a pre-sound vibration also. So there are four different types of sound vibrations. Not all of them are audible. But even a person who takes a vow of silence, he's always speaking also. But no one can hear it except for himself. Satyam, but it should be truthful. When we speak, it should be something that's not dishonest. Priya, and it should be pleasing. Not that I've discovered the truth, or I'm going to say the truth, and I'm going to hit whoever comes around me on the head with it. I'm more interested in hitting people on the head with the truth than having people understand what the truth is or accept the truth. Therefore, truth, speech, which is truthful, should also be pleasing. And it should be beneficial. Not that we tell the truth, any old truth, and it's pleasing, but it has no benefit to the person we're speaking to. Nothing practical, but it sounds good, and it's the truth, but no one knows how to, you can't apply it. It should be beneficial. And it should be according to the Shastra. Not that I think something's truthful, I think it'll help people, and it's said in a very nice way, but it has nothing to do with Krishna's directions or the Shastra. And anuvegam actually means it shouldn't agitate people's minds. Not that I say something very truthful, I think it's beneficial, I try and say it in a pleasing way, and it's exactly what Krishna says, but the person colloquially flips out. I tell someone he's a dog, he's a hog, he's a cow and an ass, And I said in a very nice way, "You, my dear sir, are the world's nicest cow, dog, hog, and ass." So it was beneficial. It was, maybe I said in a pleasing way. It was truthful. It was what Krishna said. But obviously the person may not accept it. So this is austerity when speech is concerned. But here we find Vidura, he's saying that Duryodhana is offense personified. Therefore, it is not possible to always be pleasing in one's speech, especially when one is requested to give counsel to a king. Of course, one should be a little careful giving counsel to kings also. There's one king had invited all the astrologers in his kingdom, one after another, consult with them to ask them how long they'd have left to live, the astrologer. So some astrologers, they did their astrological charts. They say, "Well, I have 40 years. The king said, "You're wrong." And he had them executed. Then another astrologer came and he said, "I have 20 years. So the king said, "You're wrong." And he executed him. After all, if he's executed him, he didn't have very much left to live. And then another one. So finally, there was practically no astrologers left in the kingdom because they all had some idea, maybe 10 years, 20 years, 5 years, but they were all killed by the king, so therefore their life expectancy was actually zero. So the king got rid of all the bad astrologers in the kingdom that way. And then finally, when he got one astrologer, he said, "How long do I have left to live?" He said, "Well, I don't know. It's up to the king." So he was the only one who survived. So that's one way of making sure that you're getting good advice from an astrologer. Do it yourself. Self-service. But here, Vidura, he's telling the absolute truth, even to an enemy. Because this has all the good qualities, because obviously it was beneficial not only for Dhritarashtra, but even for Duryodhana. Duryodhana was offense personified. He was going against the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And even worse than that, he was going against the Supreme Personality of Godhead's devotees. Just like you may be on the street, it's one thing if you insult a person on the street, he may tolerate it. But if you hit his dog, he'll never be able to tolerate it. Then immediately you'll have a fight. So similarly, Krishna may tolerate so many insults, but if one insults or hurts his devotee, then Krishna becomes obliged to protect his devotee. Duryodhana was not only insulting Krishna, but he was also insulting his devotees in so many different ways. He was trying to kill them, actually. He had sent them to a house of lack and set it on fire. He fed Bhima poison. Of course, Prabhupada remarks that these things were normal in Kshatriya families, or at least in politics. Just like nowadays, one really never knows what the government is actually doing. They have one front. The newspaper is more or less working for the government, and they present a certain propaganda, a certain idea of what's going on. But most people know something else is really going on. And amongst themselves, they're vying to get the topmost position, and they'll practically do anything in order to achieve it. In politics and love, there are no rules and regulations. The only rule and regulation is that there are no rules and regulations. Therefore, Duryodhana, although Vidura was giving good advice that it wasn't a good idea for him to attack the Pandavas. Still, he was, by the laws of nature and by his envious attitude, therefore he was destined to get into a conflict with the Pandavas. I think part of the Mahabharata explains that he was personally sent by the demons, the Rakshasas, to the earth planet in order to help try to destroy religious principles at the end of Dwarpa Yuga. That Krishna had come to get rid of the unwanted population, especially the unwanted Kshatriyas, and the demons who formerly were, actually they had demons, a lot of them probably explains, they had fought against the demigods on the shore of the ocean of milk, if you remember that famous fight. Maybe some of us were there too. We may not remember, but maybe those, because of our liking for milk, we've taken birth to the farm here where there are some cows. In any case, by the shore of the ocean of milk, the demons were fighting the demigods. It was a very fierce fight. Even some of the people who were killed during the fight, they were so enthusiastic about fighting that they had in their ghostly bodies, they picked up their gross bodies and they continued on with the fight. I mean, that's enthusiasm. In any case, many of the demons were killed, and because they had the good fortune of fighting against the demigods, they took birth as kings on this planet. Unfortunately, they did not give up their demoniac mentality, and therefore Krishna had to personally come and kill them again. Just like in that famous fight, there was one Kalanimi, he was riding on the back of a lion. And Lord Vishnu came to fight against him. So Kalanimi, he threw his trident at Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu, needless to say, caught the trident, and in order to reciprocate with Kalanimi, he threw it back at him. Unfortunately, Kalanimi couldn't catch the trident, at least not in his hands. He caught it in his chest, and he was killed. And he came back as, who would he come back as? Yes, he came back as Kamsa. So this is an example of past life regression. Narada Muni came and told Kamsa that in your last lifetime you were Kalanimi. We can see that Narada Muni believed in reincarnation. And even Kamsa, who was a big demon, he also believed in reincarnation. So it's not that only the devotees believe in reincarnation. Even the demons do sometimes. But he had found out that he was killed in his last lifetime, and therefore he had the opportunity to become Kamsa. And then he made an enmity against Lord Vishnu. He wanted to kill Vishnu, just like Hiranyakashipu was always thinking of, Ravana was always thinking of killing, of kidnapping Sita, fighting against Ram. Hiranyakashipu wanted to kill Vishnu because he had killed his little brother Hiranyaksha. So the demons, they have an natural enmity towards the devotees and Vishnu. And it's so strong that under any circumstance, practically speaking, it manifests itself. Kamsa, when he came into the prison to kill the eighth child of Devaki, saw it was a girl. I mean, big, strong Kamsa had fought against all the demigods. The little baby, he picks a fight with the little baby. He thinks, I can't lose. He takes the little baby and starts smashing against the wall. Then the little baby was not a little ordinary baby. It was actually Durga Devi. She appeared with eight arms, saying, Kamsa, you're such a fool that the person who will kill you has already been born. You shouldn't mistreat your brother and sister. So Kamsa, although he was a big demon, his worshipful demon, demigoddess was Durga. Because the demons, they know, the elevated demons, they know they have to pray to someone to get some power, so they pray to Durga. So he was thinking that my brother and sister are not ordinary, they actually had Durga as their child. Although they were supposed to have Vishnu as their child, he was not very impressed by Vishnu being their child. But Durga, he was impressed. Therefore, he released them. But due to his bad association, and who is his counselors? Does anyone know? He met with his counselors. He had a little meeting, temple council. What's that? No. His advisor. Who is his advisors? His ministers. Who? Who is Kongsir's ministers? Take a wild guess. Who is his intimate friends? His ministers were Putana. Yes, all his ministers were the ones he sent to Vrindavan. Putana, Bakasura, Trinavarta, Agasura. So when you have such friends, you can't expect very brahminical advice from them. You can imagine the type of parties they used to have. So they obviously advised him that, why are you making some compromise with Vishnu? That you should immediately go out and kill all the little children who were born within the last 10 days. And that way, not only you should kill the little babies, but you should kill all the Brahmins and anyone who performs sacrifice. And that way, we'll cut down the root, because the root of Vishnu is sacrifice. And if we kill all the Brahmins and the cows who are necessary for sacrifice, then there'll be no more sacrifice and Vishnu will die. And then our life will be perfect. That kind of attitude is not very hopeful for making very much spiritual progress. In any case, Kongsa immediately accepted that advice and he started a campaign to kill all the children. That's why Putana was assigned and all of them. Agasura, Bakasura, they were all on a campaign, a marathon to kill children. So that's the nature of the demons. So we can't expect nowadays either that all the demons will be very favorable to the Hare Krishna movement. No, most of the demons, they won't even want to chant the name of Krishna. And if they do chant, it won't be very favorable. Of course, as long as the devotees act like demons, the demons will think that the devotees are making some progress. If the devotees don't criticize the demons, they don't agitate the demons at all. They're always very nice to the demons and obliging to the demons. Then they'll think, oh, the devotees are not so bad. But as soon as they make propaganda and people start realizing who's a demon, who's a devotee, trying to put things in the proper perspective, then the demons will become very disturbed because that's their business. And this is going on since time immemorial. And it'll go on since time eternally from now. So it's not that in some future time, as soon as the demons hear about the glorious activities of Krishna and his devotees, they'll become enlivened and become devotees. No, those who are born again demons and who will be born again and again as demons, Tana Ham Dvishita Kuran, Sam Sureshan Naradama, Shi Pramyajasram Ashubam, Asri Shveva Yonishu. Those who are envious and mischievous, who are lowest among mankind, I perpetually cast into the lower species of life. So even Krishna, he has some discrimination. Although Krishna, he's a Maha, he has the absolute vision. His expansion, Srimati Radharani, is very nice. I mean, he has very nice qualities. He's a reservoir of all good qualities, but even he discriminates. Although he loves the demons in one sense, but he doesn't like their demoniac activities. And when he comes, paritranaya sadunam vinishaya tridiskritam, he kills the demons. The fact is that in this material world, to some extent or another, everyone has some demoniac leaning. Everyone is here to challenge the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Krishna, in the form of time, he's killing everyone. That everyone is dying here. Of course, there's a difference between the devotees dying and a demon's dying, or asura. The difference is, just like when a cat picks up its kitten, the kitten purrs. But when the same cat picks up a rat, the rat does not feel very comfortable. Similarly, when Krishna comes as death, the devotees are being brought back to the spiritual world, those who are pure devotees. And the demons, they're being sent down to the lower species of life. They're being escorted by Yamaraj, Yamaraj's agents, the Yamadutas. In any case, Krishna, as we all know, is the number one terrorist because he's gradually killing everyone and they can't discover where he is. Even Hiranyakashipu, after his little brother was killed by Lord Varaha, he was looking everywhere for him. But Krishna is very cunning. He hid in the heart of Hiranyakashipu, took shelter there, because he knew demons never look inside themselves to understand things. So in the heart of Hiranyakashipu, it would be very safe because Hiranyakashipu would never look there to try and find Vishnu. So the purport is that we can expect the demons will always be against the devotees, and the devotees should not compromise with the demons. Of course, we find sometimes that under certain circumstances, devotees will say things which will be such that some of the innocent people who are currently being misdirected by the demons will be properly directed. For instance, Prabodhananda Saraswati, he writes, Dante Nidaye Kuhakam, Trinakam, Ipetya. That I take a straw between my teeth and I approach you, falling down at your feet, flattering you 1,000 times. O sadhu, O great soul. So naturally, the person thinks, oh, here is an admirer. This person has some intelligence. He can see a good thing. He can understand a good thing when he sees it. Therefore, he's my devotee, so maybe I should give him some shelter. So what can I do for you? Then he said, give up your nonsense and take shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya. So sometimes the devotees, they have to flatter people. In the airport, I was doing the marathon with devotees in Los Angeles, and this is probably, I guess, the biggest year they've had, at least for a long time. There were 18 devotees going out to the airport in LA, and some of we were leaving at 8:30 in the morning, and some of the devotees are getting out back at 1 o'clock in the morning also, the next morning. Needless to say, they were distributing hundreds of books, big books. Some of the devotees are doing 200 big books a day. And one of the ways they were doing is that they were approaching people, and whatever you see nice about the person, especially because everyone is trying to put forward some message, the clothes they wear, the way they, their hairstyle, some button on their shirt or something, is trying to convey some message. Everyone's trying to convey some message. So if you just go up to them and say, you know, saw the shirt, looks good. Then immediately people feel good. Well, here's an admirer, and
The more you do it, the more you get into it. Hey, I saw that shirt. It looks really good. Then the more you get into it, then people stop and think, well, here's a Myra. And if you give them too much time to think, they'll think, you know, what is this guy trying to sell me? So you got to go real, you can't let their brains work too. Can't give them time to think. And you go, they stop and you go, Chicago, where are you from? And you think, well, here's my Amira, my devotee. He's asking me where I'm from. I should give him that much information as a reciprocation. And then once you stop the person, and they just feel good, you know, here's my devotee, and what can I do for him? So it makes selling books much easier. So this is the advice of Prabodhananda Saraswati. So sometimes the devotees, they have to flatter ordinary persons, like Raghunath Das. His father, Govardhan Majumdar, and Hiranya Majumdar, his uncle, they were cheating the government out of so much taxes. So one Mohammedan tax collector, he became envious, and he wanted to get the money. So he came with his men and tried to arrest Hiranya and Govardhan Majumdar's. But they left, and they left Raghunath Das there. So Raghunath Das, he arrested Raghunath Das, tried to chastise him. But Raghunath Das simply flattered him, practically speaking, calling him uncle and etc., etc. And then his heart melted out of affection for Raghunath, and then there was some agreement made. So sometimes the devotees use diplomacy, like in order to get King Prataparudra a meeting with Lord Chaitanya, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and Ramananda Roy used diplomacy to convince Lord Chaitanya about the love of King Prataparudra. So Prabhupada writes that sometimes the devotees, they use diplomacy in order to get what they need, what's necessary for Krishna's service. So we have to use our intelligence, but in this instance, Vidura didn't see any reason to use diplomacy because Duryodhana was about to destroy the kingdom and destroy himself. Diplomacy would not help under that circumstance. Therefore, Vidura, as a service to Krishna and as a service to Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra, he told the straight truth. Knowing well it wouldn't be received very well, but at least he tried the best he could. And although it was certainly an insult to Duryodhana, Prabhupada writes here that even Duryodhana, within himself, he knew that was the truth. But still, because he was obsessed with hatred towards the Pandavas, he couldn't do anything about it. Similarly, Dhritarashtra, he also knew it was the truth, but as he told Akrura, when Akrura was sent by Lord Krishna to ascertain the situation in Hastinapur, and Akrura was giving Dhritarashtra advice that it's not a good idea that you're favoring your son, Duryodhana, who's offense personified, who's going to destroy the whole kingdom because he's going against Krishna and the Pandavas, who are infallible. So Dhritarashtra said, yes, it's a fact that it's not good I'm favoring my sons over the Pandavas, but still, due to my fatherly affection, I can't avoid it. That you're giving me good instructions, but your instructions are going through my mind just like lightning goes through a cloud. So he understood that in the future, he and his followers and his sons would all be killed by Lord Krishna and the Pandavas. He knew it was good instruction, but he couldn't accept it because of his being overwhelmed by the material energy. But Duryodhana at least, Dhritarashtra at least, when the proper circumstances were there, then he could actually take good instruction, and under the advice of Vidura, he retired into the forest and reached some kind of city or perfection, which later on, after he became cleared of the offenses against the Pandavas, meant that he would be able to take up the platform of devotional service and get real vimukti or go back to the spiritual world. So Vidura's instructions, although they seem to be more or less not very practical or not very efficacious under these circumstances, not producing a good effect, ultimately they did because Dhritarashtra became at least liberated from this bodily concept of life, from his affection for his relatives, and at least achieve some kind of liberation. So I'll stop there. Any questions? Yes.
Is anyone ever qualified to receive instructions? I'm not talking about the great Mahajan. Let's say just as we go about our life, you know, we've been devotees for 20, 30 years, whatever, 15 years, and then you see things, and then out of good intention, well, maybe you should try this, or, you know, maybe there should be some correction here, like that. And I think at the beginning of that purport, it describes how I give some instructions and correction, and people generally take it the wrong way, even if it's well intentioned. So how do you know if someone's qualified to hear that instruction, or is it rather that you're not qualified to actually hear it? It seems on a logical level you might be qualified to hear it.
Well, that's what etiquette is. That's what the Upana Ashrama system is that there is a certain etiquette that people are supposed to follow in terms of superiority. Just like, for instance, people who are elder than you, people who have a higher caste than you, people who are more learned than you, people who have a higher spiritual position than you, have more experience than you, etc., etc. There's a certain etiquette so that things were set up so that good instructions can be conveyed and people are trained up according to that etiquette. But nowadays, there's no etiquette. Everyone is more or less the same. And therefore, no one can give instructions to anyone. Because everyone's not the same. They'll follow instructions as long as they think they'll get some money or some prestige or something from it. So therefore, for a Shudra, which Kalo Sudra Sampava, everyone in this age, being born as a Shudra and trained up to be less than a Shudra, they're all motivated by only money or by prestige or by the stick. So if you take a stick in your hand and give some instructions, they may follow, especially if they're smaller than you. But that may not always be the best way of giving the instructions. Therefore, you may have to flatter someone. Or you may have to give them some material benefit for following the instructions. Other than that, a Shudra won't follow an instruction unless there is some motivation. So if you're not prepared to motivate someone to follow the instruction, they may not follow it. And you don't follow it, or what?
No, how do you help someone who may be a little bit superior, even in that etiquette sense? You know, it's like someone's an older devotee in a situation like that.
Well, there's different. You have to pray to Krishna. Krishna has to give you the intelligence. You may have to approach his superior or someone on the same level as him. You may have to fall at his feet. Just like Ramananda Roy, he approached Lord Chaitanya about King Prataparudra. So he said, it was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He said, I have something I want to ask you, but can you promise me that you're not going to get overreact? You know, promise me immunity from fear from your response. So Lord Chaitanya said, yes, you can say whatever you want to say, but I may accept it if I like it, I'll reject it if I don't. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya told him that this king has some love for you and he wants to see you. So Lord Chaitanya said, well, this is a very bad thing that you just said, that if you tell me anything like that again, then I'm going to leave. He didn't leave then, he said, he just warned him. So he didn't accept it, but he didn't leave either. He didn't overreact. So one has to create the proper circumstances that the advice may be at least listened to. We can't expect a superior to have to accept it, but they at least can listen to it. Yes.
What's the definition of politics?
Political? politics. It means you try to make some policy. Sometimes it is, yeah. You have to convince people how to create some policy. If everyone you meet, you walk up to and say, you know, I just want to tell you exactly what I think. In the name of honesty. But that's only one quality of speech. There's also pleasing, truthful, and not agitating people's minds, and things that are beneficial, and which are actually according to the Vedic literature. So it's not that I'm absolutely perfect in what I'm doing, because I'm being truthful at least, telling exactly what's in my heart. But there are other qualities that should be there too. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.